to a week or so ago and asked about an interview?
Yeah.
Is this a good time?
I guess.
Okay. First, let me tell you, I appreciate this very much, taking you away from your family, but I do appreciate it. I'll ask you a dozen or so questions. First, one of the results of these interviews is that the subject gets a big increase in fan mail. Is that a problem?
Beg your pardon now?
One of the side effects of the interviews I do is that the fellow I interview gets a big increase in fan mail that he receives. Is that a problem?
I wouldn't think so.
Okay, good. Some people don't seem to care for it, but most of them, I think, kind of like it. Okay, I'll ask you a dozen or so questions. If you would,
what
please.
What are you doing with this? Are you commercializing it or what?
It goes into a magazine called Sports Collector's Digest. Is that all right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. It'll appear probably 3 or 4 months as a lag phase from the time it's sent in to the time they get printed. Okay, anything I ask you don't want to answer, please just don't answer. Or if you want to add anything, please do. You originally came to the majors in 41. Were the White Sox the team that signed you, or did you sign with an independent team?
No, I signed with Shreveport in the Texas League. They were had a gentleman's agreement with the White Sox.
I see. So you weren't White Sox properly until later on?
No, they bought me in 1941.
Okay. Well, you went at St. Paul. You were White Sox property when you were at St. Paul?
Right.
Okay, and that's, you were drafted into the Army?
Yes.
Did you play ball there?
Yeah. Let's see, in 1945 I played 98 games.
Wow. Did you go overseas or was this in this country?
No, just in the country.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, at the end of 46, after the service, you came to the majors to stay. And it's part of the White Sox property. You stole a lot of bases. Evidently you had some speed. Base stealing wasn't stress too much back then. Were you allowed to run or were you given a sign?
No, I was allowed to run on my own.
Okay, good.
But the thing about stealing bases at that time, it's not like it is now. You stole when you're way ahead or something, you hit the dirt the next time you came to play.
That's the way it ought to be, too.
So if you didn't try to show anybody up, you stole when it meant something.
Uh-huh.
Only.
That's the game today has gotten a little out of hand in that respect.
Definitely.
Would you have been a bigger base stealer than under the mindset they have today?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
You don't know, but I stole a lot of bases if I'd run like they run today because, third base was easy to stole, and you could run all the time before that goes in.
Mm-hmm.
You stole a pitcher, you didn't steal a catcher, so you, they always, nearly every one of them gave something away, and when they were going to first base and whatnot, so they were pretty easy to steal.
Just a matter of getting to know them, right? Also, you were a right fielder. You were, well, you were probably as good a right fielder as there was in the American League.
I played center field for about 12 years or 13 or something.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I got hurt over in Philadelphia at Achilles, and I asked Dykes to move me to right field so I wouldn't have to run so much. And he did, and when I got well, I said, I'll go back to right field. I mean, center field, when you say so. He said, well, if I were you, I'll just leave you over because we had never had anybody could keep a man from going first to third on a base hit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I led the league in assists that year or something.
You led, I think, 3 times in assists overall. When I first most fall in baseball, it was the middle of your career, I guess. You were a right fielder then. I just assumed you had been. Right along. Well, in 53 with the A's, you had, I guess, probably your best year. You batted 303. And then they traded you to the Indians. Actually, they didn't trade you. They gave you to the Indians, basically. It was a tremendously one-sided trade. What did you feel about that trade?
Well, I instigated. What happened, like I said, I had a best all-around year I had, and I had 88 line drives caught, and I could have led the league real easy if I had been lucky, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished eighth, but I could have led the league with because of so many were caught. But anyway, the Mac said I deserve quite a raise, but they couldn't afford to give it. And I said, well, somebody is. I don't know who it would be. But so they wrote in a paper, gave it to the news media that I wanted so-and-so, and they'd offered so-and-so. And I called the Associated Press, and I got through. I called the United. I said, I'm not looking for publicity or mad, so I ridiculed them about lying. And then they called me over the phone, didn't appreciate what I said about them in the press. They said it was a two-and-a-half column in the first page in the Philadelphia paper. I told them, I said, I didn't appreciate liars either. I don't like no lying. Anyway, I told him, I said, you didn't know what I want till this point. When I told him, I said, we can't do it. I said, somebody is. Well, then Greenberg got permission to talk contract with me.
Uh-huh.
Before the trade was involved. And, well, that's what it all came about.
Well, that sure was a heck of a break for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, because, of course, I had the worst year over Cleveland hitting that I ever had, but mm-hmm. I still won a pennant and I beat the World Series.
Well, you produced well, though. You didn't bat nearly as well as you had every other year, but you still drove runs in.
I drove runs in, and I played very good defense all year.
But, you know, the A's got nothing for you. Well, of course, the A's weren't going anywhere, but they got, you know, just it was strictly, they were giving you away, I guess, is what it amounted
well,
to.
Well, I don't know what the story was. You know, I don't belittle the Max or anything, but if they'd have hired a baseball man in there to run a thing for them, they'd have been a business, you know, but they tried to run it themselves, and if they didn't have a manager who knew what was going on, they were in trouble as far as trade's concerned.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they stayed in trouble their last few years. You ran a lot less in Cleveland. Obviously, they were winning a whole lot of games. Is that why you didn't run as much?
Well, we were a different type of club over there quite a bit, you know. And we won 111 games. That set a new record. And
right.
We, a lot of those, we were out in front so much that you couldn't run, you know, you didn't dare run.
Yeah.
And we scored a lot of runs, particularly at times, and even though we had a good pitching. The bottom clubs in the league that year, we won anyway from 19 to 22 out of 22 games or thereabouts, somewhere from them. And we'd stomp them, but good. So you couldn't run in under those conditions.
Well, no reason to. You were a regular player through 1956. And to that point, you were not a very good pinch hitter. But in 57, when you started pinch hitting, you became the best pinch hitter in baseball. What happened?
Well, I played pretty regular, and when I was out or something, and started to come back in pinch hit, and I didn't ever think about it, and I wasn't a very good pinch hitter. But anyway, as I became what I classify as a part-time player, and you'd been 100 up to 130 games a year, well then, I just said to myself, if you're going to pinch hit, you're going to have to learn something about it. So then you start studying pitchers and whatnot a little bit more and observing pitchers, and it helped. it wasn't, well, I had a different philosophy on pinch hitting than most guys do, I guess, because I didn't go to the plate in a hole. The pitcher was in a hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I just got one shot at it, that's all. And I had observed well enough that I knew just about what I was going to get, and it went up there, and so I got it. I laid the bat on it, so.
Well, you sure did. You had some fantastic years. One of the most amazing records, I think, is, well, the 9 pinch hits in a row over 2 seasons.
Well, that was, I had 6 before I knew it. I think, in Pittsburgh, and they asked me, the footballer said, you don't have any pinch hits you had in a row? And I said, no. And I didn't. And they said, 6. And they said, you know what the record is? I said, I have no idea. I said, 7. Well, then I started thinking about it. So I hit a home run to tie it with 2 on Pittsburgh, and then I doubled to break it, and then I doubled off Burdett the next time up to set the 9. Then the 10th time up, I really hit one in Cincinnati, and the wind got it, and Bell jumped and stuck in his way about when that good walk up there.
Oh, boy. So it was almost 10, huh?
Yeah, almost 10.
Well, you batted 400 as a pinch hitter. Well, what? I know you batted 400 twice. Maybe.
Yeah, 444 one year, 414 one, I know.
Yeah, and there's, well, there's a 333, there's a, another one that's just under 400. I'd have to sit down and figure it out.
Another thing involved. When I went to the National League, I didn't know these guys very well, and they didn't know me, but I kept a log on them during the ball game. I got me a pad, and I kept a record of curveballs and fastballs. And if a guy threw a slider, I'd ask hitters about it. And if he got a lot of his curveballs over, his curveball. But if he didn't get very many of his curveballs over, I said I'd hit the fastball. And by record, you almost knew what you were going to get. And whether you got it, that's all you had to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just watch for it.
Yeah.
61, you set the American League record. It still stands, 24 pinch hits.
Yeah.
And what, you led the National League 1 year with?
Davalio, I think, was in the National League tight end or something.
Somebody. After you retired, several years after you retired, had 25 pinch hits in the National League.
Was there?
Yeah. I'll tell you who it was. Let me look real quick. Might have been Jose Morales. Let me see. I've got it somewhere. It would take me just a second to find it. Where is it? Just a second. I think it was Jose Morales. Yeah, Jose Morales in 1976 had 25. Davalio tied you with 24.
Oh, was there? Yeah, I figured he did, but I didn't know.
Let me see how many at-bats Morales had that year, though, I'll tell you. Morales. He had 25 and 78 at-bats. He had 1 more hit and 6 more at-bats than you did. So you had a better average. You played throughout the 50s, and the 1950s was the time when they were signing these bonus boys to where they had to spend 2 years on the major league roster.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I guess if they'd have got good and drunk, they could have come up with a dumber rule, but they'd have been hard-pressed to do it. What did you think of that rule?
Well, I think it hurt the young ball players because, you know, they need to be in the minor leagues where they can use observation, not the way to learn.
Yeah.
You have to participate to learn, and it really hurt ball players. Of course, they could gain some knowledge of how to do things and whatnot. For instance, Rusty Staub, he's down there in Houston when I worked for them, and He never forgot some things we talked about down there.
Yeah, he had the advantage of being able to play when he was young. A lot of these boys, as you said, you can't perfect it by just sitting on your rear end.
Yeah, that's all it did. Most of them couldn't play, you know, and wasn't close to ready. There are very few guys that are signed, even out of college and whatnot, can go in and do the job in baseball.
Mm-hmm. It's a learning, a continuous learning process.
It's definitely a learning process, and it's a lot more to it than hitting and running and catching and throwing it, you know. And as soon as they have to, a guy just has to learn.
Yeah.
I'll make this statement a lot of times, and I've made it a lot of times. I was one of the smartest guys ever got the big leagues. I know I was because they found me. It took me about 2 days to find out I didn't know nothing.
It takes some guys years to learn that.
And yeah, it did. It does. And it didn't take me long. I can tell you that because I thought, well, in the minor leagues, I learned a few things. And I got there, I found out that I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's if you realize that, you're going to improve. If you don't realize.
Well, my philosophy also is if you, in any sport or any phase of life, particularly in baseball, if you keep an open mind, if you can learn things every day, you're going to continue to learn. If you just say, well, I know it all, like some ball players get to the point where they won't take instructions and they know it all and they're through learning right on the spot. They don't last very long, usually.
Not just in baseball, but in life in general. Well, you ended up with the Red Sox and then stayed on and scouted for the Red Sox for a while.
Well, yeah, I managed for Houston for 3 or 4 years, and then 1 year for Boston, and then scouted for about 8,
okay,
I guess. And then one for Atlanta in 1975, my last year.
Okay, so you've been out of baseball then since then?
Yes.
Okay. You were in the major leagues for a long, long time, 18 years.
Well, 19 years and something days, 1992 or something.
We're counting the service time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in that time, you saw an awful lot of ball players come and go. Who was the best one?
Well, the best all-around ball player that I saw, in my opinion, and there'd be a lot of people disagree with it, but Joe DiMaggio,
mm-hmm.
He did it all, made it look easy, and they said, well, Dominic was a much better outfielder than he was. That's a bunch of baloney. Dominic made everything look hard. Joe made it look easy. And another thing he did, I had a much better arm than Joe did, but I tell you one thing, he didn't run on him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he caught all fly, he'll never know this, but I copied him.
Oh yeah?
Tried to, because he and I taught it after I got out. He caught all fly balls in his throwing shoulder. And
yeah.
He wasn't like these hot dogs now where you catch it one hand regardless, but he caught it in the throwing shoulder and then he came right back in a little skip and let it go. And then it was on a dime with it also. All ground balls was in his right knee, his showing side knee,
mm-hmm.
Where he came up showing. And he didn't lose any time at that.
You get pick up that split second. That's the difference between getting a man or not.
Difference of a stride or two.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't get over the way the guys catch the ball. Off to their glove side, one-handed,
yeah,
their throwing hand.
It's a double play or throw to the outfield or what. I always said this, if I manage, and I thought a guy had a chance to throw a guy out, but then do that, I'd have to bench him or take his money or something, because I couldn't put up with it. I don't think I could manage because of the way the hot dogs play today.
It's much better son who plays college ball right now, and I can't get over the way the kids are playing ball. And it gets worse every year.
Well, I made this statement long before I got out. I've never ridiculed ball players like the old timers used to ridicule us and whatnot, but I will say this, they don't get near as much out of their ability as they could.
Mm-hmm.
I think money's most of the cause of that.
Well, money is something, isn't it? Well, they don't.
Rayford?
You fellas, you had to get as much out of it because you were playing this year for what you were going to make next year.
Yeah.
Today, they don't have to do that.
I get the long-term contracts, you know, and if they get a hangnail, they don't want to play.
Yeah.
Well, a lack of competition also. They expanded, so was I played part of that time, but when I started in the big leagues for 10 years or so, they had 16 clubs. That means 200 and something ball players in the minor leagues. You take these guys now and put 200 and something of them in the minor leagues, and you're going to see some competition.
Yeah, yeah, they're going to hit a whole lot better ball. That's right, I agree with you. Who was the best pitcher you saw in your time?
Well, that's hard to say because the guys that gave me the most trouble were the soft tossers, so you couldn't put your finger on the best pitcher. The hardest throw I saw was Feller.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as just the best pitcher, that would be hard to say. You just have to go by record because some of those soft tossers run me crazy.
Who was the toughest on you? Was there one that stands out?
Oh, there's a little guy named Flowers Puerto Rican or something. It looked like a balloon coming up there. And then Lopat also, he ran me crazy also.
Yeah.
But I know what, it wasn't them, it was me. That ball looked so big I tried to hit it too hard. It was, but.
Were you better left-handed or right-handed?
I was a better hitter, I think the record would prove, left-handed, because, there was a reason for that as far as I was concerned. I wasn't like Mantle. Mantle could hit the ball, take batting practice against right-handers and it didn't affect him, but I couldn't. I did something different than so right-handers throwing hitting practice, so I didn't take hitting practice and left the left-handers through. I was over Baltimore one year. Harry Burkeen threw hitting practice nearly every day, and I think the record was, I don't remember what it was, but the record was proved I was a better right-handed hitter that year than I was at any time in my career.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the whole answer to it.
Like anything else, the more you do it, the better you're going to be. Is there one game, did you hit three triples in a game once?
Yes.
Okay, I remember that. I was about 14 years old, so a little bit in the mid-50s. And I think it was on, I lived out in California, I think it was on the, remember they used to have the recreations of the games? The guy read it off a ticker tape and made the sounds with the crowd and everything. I think that was one of the recreated games when I was a kid. Is there one game, maybe that was it, maybe another, that stands out as your best game, you think?
Well, I don't know. I had a real good game against Neuhauser once, and then a guy named Nelson Potter, my first start in the big league in, I guess that's 46, and we got six hits off of him, and I got four.
Wow.
And two singles and a triple, and I hit him the only run. We beat him 1-0. So Neuhauser, one day I got 4-for-4, three doubles and a single, and I did 4-5 runs. I believe we beat him 5-4. I got him 4 of those 5 runs.
Neuhauser was tough,
and he. Next day, he tried to learn something, and he said, well, you know, what a day yesterday. I hit it pretty good. He said, you get some good pitches. I said, well, I thought some of them were a little bad, turned and walked. The guy tried to learn something, and he couldn't talk to him.
Was there, we'll talk about Neuhauser for a second. There's a lot of talk about him being in the Hall of Fame. Do you think he belongs in the Hall of Fame?
Neuhauser?
Yeah.
I definitely do.
Yeah. He was.
Possibly the best left-hander in the American League for several years.
I think he was. I don't think there's any question, but possibly. Yeah. I think you talked to the guys who played against him or with him.
Maybe they didn't like him personally or his attitude.
You couldn't. You know, his attitude and whatnot, you couldn't. But you can't take a record away from him.
Yeah. Man wins, what, 25 games 1 year, 29 another, 25 or 26 another year?
Yeah. That's a pretty tough ballpark to pitch as in Detroit because the ball really, you got the great background, the best hitting ball player ballpark in baseball.
Right.
Great background, and if you hit one good, it's gone. And so it's pretty tough to pitch in.
Mm-hmm. He led an ERA 2 or 3 years too, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was something. I think he ought to be in. Did you save souvenirs and mementos from your career?
Yes. I've got the two autographed balls, or decorated balls, of pinch hit situation. One, I think, is on the 24th of the season. The other one's at the record deal, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got World Series bats, hats of every club I played with. And I've got quite a few things.
Good. It's nice, I think, to save the stuff.
Arms.
Pardon?
I've got a couple of old-time uniforms. One attorney in, I don't know where he was from, northeast someplace. Wouldn't know if I had any uniforms, and if I did, name my own price. I said, they aren't for sale.
Good. Thing is, if you sell them, they'll just end up selling them for twice as much.
That's right.
That brings up a question. What do you think of the autograph situation the way it is now, about people selling autographs and baseball card shows and stuff
like
that?
Well, I don't like it. I went back to Philadelphia a year ago last May on an autographing situation.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, kids, you know, what's in my opinion, you can't do too much for kids. And but try to separate that from commercial, and that was strictly a commercial. Of course, I got paid for it, but that's strictly a commercial, and I wouldn't have gone had not I'd been misled on it. But to jeopardize kids in the autograph field, that commercial deal has really hurt them, because some ball players won't sign because of the commercial situation.
They're very suspicious, I know.
To separate is tough. If you could separate, you can't do too much for kids. But, you know, I don't like the guys commercializing on it.
Davey Williams, who lives down there in Texas.
Yeah, he's originally Dallas.
Yeah, he is got to be the nicest fellow I think I've ever spoken with. Boy, what a nice man. But
he's a nice fellow. He's a little second baseman.
He got a package of 50 pictures of him from a fellow in New York, asked him to autograph them, said he was going to give them away to kids. He's a school teacher, and give them away to kids. And so Davey said, that's all right. He did it and sent it back. A few months later, he got 50 more. And he tried to find this fellow. He called the school board in New York and different places. Nobody had ever heard of this guy as a teacher. And he said he signed them and sent them back again, but he said, don't send any more. Well, after I spoke with Davey, I came across an advertisement. In fact, in the publication this interview will appear in. This fellow had done this not only to Davey, but to dozens of other ball players, and he was selling them for $8, $10, $12 a piece.
Yeah.
I guess you suspect that if somebody sends you 10 pictures or something, you're going to suspect that somebody sends you one.
10 pictures, yeah. I don't even send them back. I question them in the first place. And, you know, up to 3 or 4 or 5, because kids trade them and whatnot, I used to do. But there was an organization, let's see, I don't remember exactly where they were from, two or three years ago, wrote me a letter wanting to know if I would sign 100 8x10s for $50. And I wrote them back and said, no, I wouldn't.
Good.
And they finally I forgot what it was all about, but they gave quite a bit more than that, and I finally agreed to it.
Was that a place up in Kansas City?
Beg your pardon?
Was that in Kansas City? There's an outfit?
No, this was an some kind of organization. I forgot what it was. That, this is the Northeast, but I can't remember. But anyway, it was some kind of organization, and they explained the organization to start with. You know, they gave me the whole situation, and it wasn't a selling deal. This organization was giving them to clients or some kind of a deal. You know,
mm-hmm.
Forgot what it's all about, but that's the way they explained it.
Okay, well, that doesn't sound like too bad a deal. Do you get much fan mail today?
Oh, gee.
Do you really? Is it all autograph requests?
Majority of it is. Because there's a lot of guys who want to know a lot of things, you know, that about your career. And as far as I'm concerned, they can read that in a magazine or something, you know, most of it. But anyway, if a guy calls, a different story. But anyway, I guess only no telling how many requests on average. But anyway, I get quite a few.
Well, you have a long, good career. I suspect you're still very popular with a lot of people.
Well, the older, maybe older people, but young guys, they probably never heard of me. But anyway, there's a difference in lawfare. I managed a guy in a club in the California League, and I brought up Joe DiMaggio for as an illustration of some kind. And he said, "Who was he?"
Oh, no.
Well, this guy said, "Who was he?" I just eliminated him right there. I said, "Well, you don't even get close." He didn't either.
That's amazing.